My name's Ian Carter. I teach at CCA. And I have a feeling that I might have been invited to be on this panel so that we could eventually get around to talking about the arts again. I'm so excited to be here. This has been a really interesting group of very different kinds of presentations. And I swear that although some of the things that I'm about to say sound a lot like things that Anne had to say, it's not because we read each other's presentations. I think we just had some of the same interests. What I'm beginning with is my reaction to the title, We Who Feel Differently, that like Anne, what really appeals to me about it is the turn from feeling different that that last syllable makes, from feeling different as a place of wrongness in which many of us have the experience of feeling diminished or made less than others who don't like our difference, to feeling differently as a kind of verb form. When we think about feeling as a verb, it opens potential for political action. One of my interests in dance is as a kind of embodied verb form. Before I start talking about a particular piece of choreography, I want to geek out for a moment about feeling differently in the form of verbs. In 1862, a German writer named Karl Ulrich described his experience of feeling different with the Latin phrase, anima mulieris in corpora virilis inclusa, which is usually translated as a woman's soul imprisoned in a man's body. This is one of the founding descriptions of both modern gay identity and trans experience, and its basic claim still circulates in trans descriptions of feeling trapped in the wrong body. Feeling trapped for anyone is uncomfortable. Feeling trapped inside your own body, many people describe as an unusually lonely kind of experience. But what interests me about this is that if we put more emphasis on the verb that Ulrich offers, we might be able to imagine feeling differently about embodiment construed as wrong. Inclusa means to include or enclose. And as a result, it can mean imprison, but it can also mean to embrace. I bring this up because Carlos and Reagan asked us to talk about what is made possible by embracing difference as queer strategy in art, politics, and society. So this talk came from the idea that something interesting might happen if we embrace the classically transgender feeling of difference that is often described as the wrong body feeling. Rather than trying to make it go away, what happens if we move toward that feeling of difference? To embrace it. Because embraces are inherently social gestures. What if, instead of accepting the idea that wrongness is an inherently lonely trap, we approach it differently as a relational mode? What might we learn if we treat the wrong body feeling as capable of action other than repair, like the verb that it is? My hope is if we try this out, we might find that we can choose to embrace that experience for the information that it contains. For instance, when I was about 21, I had a panic attack in Victoria's Secret. I was trying to get out quickly and unobtrusively, so of course what happened is that I caught my combat boots on a large rack of lingerie and landed on my face, completely covered with lacy bras. My girlfriend could not stop laughing, and I lay there on the floor, face down, for a moment, realizing, having this moment of complete revelation about the embodied reality of class difference. Because my girlfriend was wealthy enough to experience any store as a potential playground. And she had, unlike me, no physical memory of humiliation in relation to consumer capitalism, and no need for fear at being required to pay for something that she had inadvertently broken but could not afford. Over the years since then, it's occurred to me that that moment of crystallization actually has needed further development for me. What I experienced at the time as class humiliation, I would like to think I've tempered now by more awareness of race privilege. If she had no reason to fear class humiliation, I had no reason to fear that the shop staff would respond like I was trying to wreck the place or steal something. My whiteness helped to keep my gendered clumsiness from becoming a security incident. So, my whiteness allowed me to feel differently than a person of color might have needed to do in the same situation. Yeah. Moments like that, when it's particularly clear how and why we feel differently from one another, can produce a particularly embodied sense of our shared socio-political situation. Such embodied political feelings can move social movements from civil rights sit-ins to Occupy, can lead us to intervene in the social spaces that we share with other bodies. Many protesters are motivated by physical vulnerability to a socioeconomic system in which access to basic physical needs, like shelter and medical care, are not protected. Bodily vulnerability is expressed via physical protest for a reason. Very often, embodied collective motion is the difference between experiencing a situation of constraint, deprivation, or subjection, and shifting that situation in some way. We call groups of political actors movements because movement is the minimal necessary strategy for creating change. It's also an artistic medium. Dance is critically interesting because it explores and expands our capacity for embodied action. What it does is generate bodies skilled at learning new ways to move. This is why dance is especially useful for thinking about transgender experience. It invites us to focus on what Carlos called, quote, our own forms of gesture. I think he was quoting David Wronowitz. And while we focus on our own forms of gesture, it also allows us to engage the way that our physical movements, our gestures towards one another, are part of a larger social choreography that pre-exists us and in which our gestures are interventions. So I'm going to turn now to a 2009 movement text by San Francisco choreographer Sean Dorsey. That's Sean. His dance, Lou, is a suite of dances for four men that is based on the diaries of Lou Sullivan, who is a 1980s gay transsexual activist. All of the people on this panel today were asked to respond in some way to the question, what is made possible by embracing difference? Dorsey's dance, based on Sullivan's life, materializes how embracing difference can assemble the social world in unanticipated ways. The particular form of difference at the heart of Dorsey's dance is sexual in both senses. Sullivan decided to seek sex change at a cultural moment when clinical protocols emphasized so-called normal outcomes, meaning that it was virtually impossible to access surgery in the United States if medical gatekeepers didn't think you stood a good chance of conforming to dominant gender norms afterwards. Those norms centrally included heterosexuality and conventional relational forms. But Lou Sullivan's transition was motivated equally by identification with and sexual desire for gay men. He not only felt different from other girls, he felt differently from other trans men. And embracing his difference from available models of transsexuality was necessary for him to embrace other men. Ultimately, his efforts to gain access to sex reassignment surgery helped to expand both medical and cultural definitions of transsexuality to include people whose transition enables their entry into queer forms of embodiment and sociality. Dorsey stages the transformative effect of Sullivan's queer embrace in a section of his dance called Desire, which opens when three men appear on stage wearing white briefs and tank tops. Wrist-crossed and holding hands, they sketch the first steps of Swan Lake's Dance of the Cygnets, and then turn toward one another, disrupting the tidy full frontal pattern to come into more direct physical relationship with one another. As the three men, still holding hands, turn and twist through one another's arms, the narrator reads a passage from Sullivan's diaries about the sexual acceptance that he found among gay men. And so the question arises, why does Dorsey quote Swan Lake while Sullivan's words tell us about his initiation into the joys of gay bathhouse sex? What does this movement have to do with transforming what it means to be transsexual so that it can include being gay, and being gay so that it can include being trans? One way to think about this is to look at the social relations encoded in the choreography and ask how that movement can be felt differently. The Dance of the Cygnets is composed of elements that are standard in Vaganova classical ballet training, where dancers progress through a fixed syllabus punctuated by tests. The Cygnets dance is from Vaganova Level 5, and it certifies, it stages the moment when a teenage girl either is or is not approved as a potential ballerina. To be chosen as a Cygnet is to be certified as a future swan, a step towards materializing the dream of being lifted out of the flock and offered a pas de deux with a male lead. The Cygnet's shoulder-to-shoulder alignment bodies forth the cultural demand that girls identify themselves with femininity and rewards them for doing so with the hope of heterosexual success. This is a normal outcome. So, from a critically queer perspective, it's clear that the Dance of the Cygnet sentimentalizes a same-sex companionship that can be perceived as charming to a normative audience to the extent that it is both pre-sexual and ephemeral. Its depiction of girlish intimacy as parallel movement documents the cultural policing that determines who qualifies for inclusion in the category girl and which girls will win in the competition for a limited number of available princes. It leaves little room for variation in sexual preference, gender expression, or life trajectory. Further, its emphasis on precision, synchronization, and purity of line constitutes an aesthetic argument that only one avenue of development counts, and only one body type is precious. So the Dance of the Cygnets is a test not only of balletic technique, but of normative femininity, and failing takes place at the level of the body. For trans subjects, such failure is all too familiar. But what if we feel differently in relation to this movement and its vision of the social? For instance, what if we're not trying to pass that femininity test? Or what if we really like the idea of being part of a flock of swans? What if we don't want to leave same-sex companionship behind? What if we'd really rather enjoy multiple connections than pursue a dream of privatized pair bonding? We might then look past the way at which the larger culture's normative demands that are replicated and encoded in ballet's vision can contribute to both gender shame and body hatred in order to focus on the pleasures of moving in unison and holding hands. We might open ourselves to appreciating the sensuality of shared momentum, the pleasures of being part of large symmetrical arrangements of many bodies, the joys of physical resemblance. This is what happens when Dorsey gives the Cygnets movement to three men. Three men are not four girls, and as such, they are clearly the wrong bodies for this choreography. They don't stand a chance of successful transition to heterosexual swanhood. But he shows us that these bodies can bear their wrongness in ways that bring them into erotic relationship with one another. Doing the Cygnet steps, the men carry their weight low and supple, they're not up on point, where the ballerinas elongate themselves with their feet flicking the floor and hurrying it off it again. Dorsey's dancers roll and slide as though their feet were tongues. Where the ballerina's carefully calibrated proximity documents sentimental homophobia, these men's crossed arms and ankles form a web of erotic community. Still holding hands, the trio melts out of the Cygnet's lateral formation to collaborate on a low traveling lift. In performance, you can see this much better. Two of them grasp one another's wrists around the third man's body and propel him forward upstage while he arches back, supported by their linked arms. The gesture is strikingly erotic. It looks as though he's being cracked open by pleasure at the same moment that he is safely contained in his two companions' embrace. It is, in fact, a tasteful visual metaphor for getting fucked by two people at once. As he lands, though, the three men come face to face with Dorsey, playing Sullivan, who has entered quietly and stands watching their approach. They stand and look at one another for a moment, and then extend their hands, and he joins their chain. concluding his passage, down on one knee with his chest arched back and head tossed backward as well, as though it is his turn to feel the ecstasy running through his spine. When the trans man enters the gay men's daisy chain, he moves the boundaries of the category gay so that it includes transsexuals, and the category transsexual so that it can encompass gay. This expansion, historically speaking, constituted a radical reconfiguration of relational possibilities. A new social world began to take shape when Lou Sullivan single-handedly, I'm not sure his hands were that important, integrated the gay baths in San Francisco. I'm not saying that such change is automatic or easy. In the 1980s, Sullivan usually felt it necessary to conceal his transsexuality in sex clubs, lest his hybrid embodiment disrupt the maleness of their erotic and social space. And he did that by presenting as having hypospadias and micropenis, which is a standard morphological variation we can talk about more. But over time, many people have come to feel differently about such moments, so that in the present, erotic interaction between trans men and bio guys is a culturally available way of expressing queer masculinity. The point is that a body that's wrongly gendered may propel new erotic formations, just as queer desires may drive the embodiment of new genders. Dorsey's dance stages and celebrates the expansion of the social world that results from the creative collaboration of people who feel differently. What this material shows us is that the shift to feeling differently allows us to reframe the wrong body experience as a push toward a social movement rather than as a lonely trap. And for Dorsey, such movement towards relationality has the potential to transform the social world in ways that have both political and aesthetic consequences. This is also about the recirculation of ballet into a queer world. But the thing is that feeling as a verb is ambiguously transitive. It does not require any given object, and once set in motion, it tends to keep going. Making a queer commitment to feeling differently means embracing ongoing change. That is where feeling's critical and political potential come from. So I want to end with the reminder that the social movement that Sullivan initiated and that Dorsey celebrates may feel different to people who are situated differently. For instance, the sex clubs that welcomed Lou Sullivan as a white trans man were not necessarily so welcoming to men of color. Turning wrong embodiment towards social movement has the potential to illuminate or obscure the relational structures that welcome some bodies to the dance, but triple card others at the door. Thank you.